Well, Julia, a more interesting ending to this one than I thought we would have gotten based on the first six innings. This one, a 9-8 loss to the Yankees in New York, but the primary eyebrow raiser on a night like this, even if the offense did just fall just short of a late rally, was, of course, Kevin Gausman, right? The shortest outing of his Blue Jays career, according to Sportsnet stats, 1 1/3. The third short of his career overall. Look, maybe he's sick.
Right.
Maybe it's a danger of having an abbreviated start to the spring and then being tossed in there. But he had nothing going tonight, and the Yankees jumped all over Gausman very early on.
Yeah, very clearly, right, Joe? From the very first pitch that he threw, it was clear that Gausman, something was off, and it didn't seem to be, you know, you and I speculated during the game, is it just the cold? But then it was clear that there was more to it than that. We saw the velocity just go extremely down in pretty much all of his pitches. It was a tick up to end his outing, a very, very short outing for him, but we did see a couple of 92, 94, 95 in there late. However, that's just not his game, right? If he's not hitting those velocities consistently, then he needs to be absolutely perfect, and if he's not feeling well, then that adds to it as well. So it was clear that there was something going on with Gausman that prevented him from being even at his at somewhat effective here. We know that, and we can't expect him to be at his best this early, and like you said, the interruptions to the spring, obviously this all will play a factor here. This was his first time coming in without, say, a pitch limitation to his outing, but from the get-go, we could see that something was off. And I don't necessarily think that with him right now, it would be simply a mental situation. It's possible that we will find out from John Schneider. We'll have to hear from him because it's so difficult to speculate on something like this. But it is possible that we will hear that there is something physical going on. Tough to see, really, because this is a guy that obviously we have come to expect such a level of consistency from him, but no one is above having these types of outings, right, Joe? I don't think that anyone is crucifying Gausman in any way, shape, or form. It's more about let's understand what is going on and then setting a course of action for 5 days from now, because right now it's not even certain that Gausman will be able to pitch.
Yeah, 8 runs. With Gausman having been your starter is usually, I would guess, enough to get you a win most nights. I know that most of the runs came after. Probably he would have been yanked anyways. Had he gone 6 innings, most of these runs coming in the 7th inning or later. But still, it's tough to see. That's Julia Kreutz. I'm Shoa Ali. You're listening to Jay's Talk here on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Also streaming on sportsnet.ca and on the Sportsnet app. Jay's 9-8 losers to the Yankees in New York. The series now even at 1 game apiece. Give us a call, 416-870-0590, 1-888-660-0590, *590 on your cellular device. You can text us as well, 590-590, name and location. The People's text line is always open. Yeah, the velo on Gausman's pitches, down, way down. Like down on pretty much all his pitches, but certainly the four-seam fastball, and you mentioned it, when he got taken out, and again, and Chris LaRue had said this during the game, and I kind of agree. Like, I wonder how much of the uptick in velo at the very end was due to him knowing that the end of his outing was coming. Because I think, I want to say 46 pitches were thrown in the second inning before even a single out was recorded. So like maybe that was a part of it, a little adrenaline getting it pumping, knowing that he's reaching back into his back pocket to pull something out right before he gets yanked. But, I mean, this, like he gives up two home runs in the first inning to Judge and Stanton. Stanton hits the fastball, a 91.3-mile-an-hour fastball for a home run. Judge's home run came on a splitter, but still 83.7 miles an hour. That splitter came out of his hand, and typically his splitters come out of his hand far harder than that, and it just wasn't moving great, was very kind of slow compared to his regular splitters. The fastball in the first inning topped out about 93. I think he hit it one time. And again, maybe it's him having a bit of the injuries in spring and the spring training campaign being really short for him. Maybe it's just an early season thing. Maybe it was cold in New York as well. Maybe that at least had a little bit to do with it. Probably with most things, Julia, it's a little bit of column A, column B, and column C. But that's tough to see because he is the team's ace. Like even when he only went, 4 1/3 or whatever it was the other day, he still looked like Kevin Gausman. He hit a batter and then got yanked in his first start of the season, and that he hit a batter at 98 miles an hour and he got nowhere close to that tonight.
That's what you expect to see from Gausman, which is why, Sho, I think it just it is safe to at least consider that there's something else going on here. And you never want to see a pitcher of that caliber suffer any type of setback, but we also need to be cognizant that this hasn't been a normal offseason for Gausman. And we have seen so many pitchers, Mitch White included, who we saw last year, how much he struggled because he had a shoulder injury during the spring and quite simply just couldn't catch up during the season. So this very much, I'm looking forward to hearing from the reporters who are there and who are going to talk to John Schneider, but certainly not good news for the Blue Jays. And yes, the bats broke out, but when you think about a Kevin Gausman start, it's just not at all what you would want or expect here.
I'm going to guess that whoever asks Schneider the first question, whether it's Hazel or Shy or Keegan, whoever is down there, I'm going to guess the first question is going to be about Kevin Gausman.
Absolutely.
It's got
to
be.
It has to be.
Right? It has to be. Let's go to the text line, 590, 590, name and location. Okay, so I see a lot of texts on this, and I agree. I'm glad people brought this up because this is something I definitely wanted to get to from a decision-making standpoint for Schneider, and I'm certain he'll be asked about this as well, about not pinch-running Vogelbach with someone in the ninth inning there. He got thrown out at second base. So I'm just going to read you a couple of texts. So, and again, leave your name and locations just so we can give you a shout-out. Charlie and Timmons, so should Vogie have been pinch-run for? What was the bench situation that could have tied it? This other one, well, there's no name on this one, but why are we not pinch running for Daniel Vogelbach? I know it's a 4-run game, but if he's not thrown out at second with a tying run at the plate with nobody out, would have tied the game. Someone else, please explain to me why Biggio wasn't pinch running for Vogelbach in the ninth. I'm perplexed. And Michael in Ottawa, if they had pinch run for Vogelbach, this game would be going into extras. Bad decision to not pinch run. So, okay, look, I definitely think that also because of the way the game ended. I do believe that like a teensy bit of hindsight in that, only because if you think about what the options were at that point, what Schneider and the guys in that dugout were weighing, I guess, Julia, were pinch running Vogelbach with the only remaining option.
Yes.
Who was Kevin Biggio, because they had emptied the bench at that point. So it was either Kevin Biggio pinch runs for Vogelbach, and then you have IKF bat in a very important spot when you need runs.
Down to your last batter,
or you let Vogelbach run and you roll the dice with the base pads, essentially.
Yeah.
And knowing you are immediately going to pinch hit IKF for Biggio. And that's what they did. And then Biggio, of course, did have a very quality AB, and he laced it back into the outfield to score a run there. But I'm not saying it's the perfect decision. It just, I feel like it's unfair because we know what happened because we watched the game. Whereas in that moment, there's no way he could have known that that's what would happen in that particular moment with Vogelbach, even though, yes, is Vogelbach the best base runner in the world? No.
No, we saw today that he isn't. And we can get into like the quantum mechanics of it, right? In a different world, they did pinch run for Vogelbach in that situation, and there's just no way of knowing or projecting what could have been there. I don't think that it's as simple as saying if they had pinch run for Vogelbach there, the game would have been going to extras, because then guess what? You don't have Kevin Biggio to come in and pinch hit for IKF in a situation where very much they needed to play the matchup against a guy like Clay Holmes, right? We saw how good his stuff was today. His stuff really moves. It kind of always surprises me just how good Clay Holmes is and he's looking right now. And we saw that again from him today. And Biggio had a very, very productive at-bat against a very tough pitcher. So it's difficult for me to criticize these managerial decisions, especially because Vogelbach was at first base. I think it would be a very different situation if he was in scoring position. And then you really get serious about, okay, if we need him to score from second, right? Okay, then we're going to look at our bench and we're going to look at and see what we can do. But at that point, a few runs back still, if I'm not mistaken, it was two or three runs behind, I get the decision to roll the dice with Vogelbach, see what happens in that AB, and just a little bit of bad luck too, I want to say there, show. These are the decisions that, you know, having 26 men on your roster, you have to sort of play the chess and play the 3D chess with it. And when are you going to bring in certain guys and how can you better utilize your bench? I got to say, the Blue Jays utilized their bench pretty well today. Their decisions did yield results. It's just the hole was too deep at that point to expect or to necessarily project that these decisions were going to be the difference maker in the end. I don't mind the way that this game was managed at all by the Blue Jays.
I suppose you could have pinch run for Kirk, but they'd already used both catchers. I think Varsho had already been come out of the game at that point for your quote unquote emergency catcher. So like I guess what IKF would be your emergency catcher in that standpoint. And I don't know. Do you really want that? No, I don't think. I don't think it's as clear cut a decision as you could have pinch run for Vogelbach, and that is the reason why the game was lost. I mean, like mainly because we just talked about Kevin Gausman; he didn't have it. There are a million reasons you can pin this game.
Yeah,
it not going in the way of the Blue Jays. I see a text here from Paul in Burlington. I feel better about a 9-8 loss than if we had won 2-1. Good to see the boys swinging the bats. And I think that's interesting because we have talked so much about the power outages and honestly, 8 runs. I honestly was thinking this during the game, Julia. Like I do genuinely wonder sometimes, and I've been thinking this throughout the first 9 games of the season, whether or not it's fair or not, I don't know. But I almost wonder what this team would look like. And I think I would almost prefer personally seeing them lose 9-8 than 2-1. Knowing that they had the ability to string together quality ABs and actually score runs. Like, what would the team look like if Lourdes was still in left field and Teoscar Hernandez was the DH? And I'm not pinning it on like the trade with Varsho and Moreno or whatever. I just, if it just feels like those guys would have made the team a little bit more fun and a little bit more, a little bit more dangerous from an offensive standpoint.
It does look that way. And I know that you lose a lot on defense, and the Blue Jays have put in an emphasis on that point. And so, yes, it is good to see that this lineup has life. I think that is the big concern right now. And so there are positives to be found in that show. I don't think that you can look at this game and necessarily see a complete waste or even simply a loss, right? Yes, it is concerning about Gausman, and we will await further updates, but knowing that this offense is capable of stringing together those good at-bats, knocking a starter out pretty early in the game, taking the walks. George Springer again started the game with a double. Ernie Clement coming in and just doing what he does. Bo Bichette showing tremendous signs of turning it around, right? Hitting a single, hitting a double, working in a walk. You see that, that things are starting to work around or get better, and then you have the Vladimir Guerrero Jr. home run to the opposite field, which sure, it wouldn't have been a home run in that many ballparks, but it's a healthy swing. It's the swing of someone who's actually seeing the ball and just making it look effortless because that is the power that he has. And if he can do that a little bit more consistently, the Blue Jays are going to be fine. But you certainly look at this show and you think, okay, good. Like, this is what this team was talking about through the offseason, through the preseason. This is the type of quality of bats that exists in this lineup. And now the Blue Jays just need to channel it and bring it in on a day-to-day basis.
That's Julia Kreutz. I'm Sho Ali. I did say that chances are one of Hazel, Shy, or Keegan would ask the question about Kevin Gausman. Well, Hazel did ask about Kevin Gausman, and here's what manager John Schneider had to say.
Kevin didn't look as comfortable out there. Did he tell you whether there was any issue with the cold or anything like that?
Yeah, he's just cold. You know what I mean? Velo was, you know, up and down, weird spots. But it was just cold. And then I think he was just more disappointed he didn't make pitches with his split. You know, Judge is, you know, kind of right in his wheelhouse there in the first. But, you know, Stanton's is a pop-up everywhere else. But, yeah, I think he just had a tough time getting loose. But he felt all right. Was just disappointed with his execution.
There you go. So no injury, I suppose, for Kevin Gausman, which is good to know. It was a little cold out in New York, as far as we can see, and clearly it affected him. So, yeah. I mean, I suppose better that than having some giant injury, some shoulder soreness, which can always be a little murky, or a finger issue or a blister or something like that. I take that as a positive. Having said that, it's still not great that curtailed his outing.
It is good to know that there is nothing more, you know, underlying there. He didn't look loose, right? He didn't look like he was able to get there, and so much so show that everyone was speculating what is it that is going on. If it's just a cold, great, right? In 5 days, he will be pitching somewhere else.
Yeah,
and that is something that can be worked around. But with a pitcher like Gausman, who had the delays to spring and the fact that in his first outing he was still on a pitch limit and we didn't really know what to expect and what would come out, it is very warranted to have a little bit more concern and just keeping a closer eye when it is very clear that his stuff isn't there. If the cold is all there is, then great. This is the best case scenario for the Blue Jays, especially when you get an offensive outing like the one they put together today. Very quick turnaround, right, Joe, for tomorrow's game. And so we'll see how that affects players as well. And if they can carry some of this momentum into the finale, because there's still a chance that they can come out of this with a series win and a pretty even road record in a super difficult stretch of the season.
Yeah, they're 4-5 now after the loss. And I mean, I remember talking about this with a whole variety of people, but like what, and Blair and Barker had this conversation both on Jay's Talk, but mostly on their actual show on Blair and Barker itself. And the idea of like what kind of record would you find acceptable after four games against Tampa, three games against the Astros, three games against the Yankees. And I think for me, the bare minimum I had said before the season started was 4-6. But it also depended a lot on how they were winning and losing games. Like if they were getting blown out every single game and only squeaking through wins, then it didn't really care for that. And that's kind of what's happened so far, right? Of course, if they go out and win tomorrow with Baden Francis on the mound, Luis Gil will pitch for the Yankees, and they win that, they come back to Toronto 5-5 against the Rays, Astros, and Yankees, I think I will absolutely take that. And I think a lot of people would as well. I see a text here kind of along the same lines as some of the other ones I've seen. Paul in Burlington had said feeling better about a 9-8 loss than winning 2-1. Peter, and he's just Peter and EG. I'm going to assume this is East Quillenberry, but you correct me if I'm wrong, Peter. This is the best Jays game in a long time, even with the loss. I'm sure 99% of fans thought the game was over after the first inning. Good for them for not giving up. And it's true. I mean, kind of thought this game was over in the sixth inning. Listen, I did. Honestly, I considered going to take a walk at some point.
Listen, Joe,
I did not, but still.
On a Saturday night, I'm not blaming anyone for turning off their television if they did think that in the first and the second innings. But those who stuck around really were rewarded here with a pretty surprising performance and just an electric atmosphere up until the end. You know, all of the pieces, all of the guys coming out of the bench, there was just so many elements to this game. Mitch White just saving the bullpen there, right? We need to talk about Mitch White.
Sure,
coming in and just he pitched extremely well, show. And you know, he probably had more in the tank, but like Chris LaRue commented in the broadcast, it is difficult to ask a long man out of the pen to say throw 80 pitches, because that means that you won't have him for 5 days. And with how White pitched today, the Blue Jays would be wise to keep him available as much as possible. He's pitching very, very well.
So Mitch White threw 65 pitches, 40 of them were strikes. He went 4 1/3. He allowed 4 hits, 3 runs, all of which were earned, 2 strikeouts and 2 walks. And yeah, he gave up a home run. I believe it was to Rizzo. And that was a 2-run jack. It's just 4 1/3 from White after he was pulled into action when your starter only went 1 1/3. I got to say, I'll take that every day of the week, especially when you compare Mitch White of 2024 to Mitch White of 2023, which was honestly like for a lot of his appearances, like a disaster, truly. And so he's gone out there and he's remade himself a little bit. He's throwing the ball a little harder, and he was still doing it for much of the game. Early game against the Yankees' best bats, and he was getting by. So, I mean, who is someone who is this, like essentially what, the sixth starter on this team, if that's what you want to consider him, the seventh starter,
right,
like
sure.
Someone who is in that range and is not the ace of this rotation or even in the top three or four. I'll take that outing from him because he held it down, and yeah, he gave up 3 runs, but you're getting 3 runs from someone who is your fifth or sixth or seventh starter in Major League Baseball, you're probably okay with that most nights.
Yeah, and that means that you still have some key arms in that bullpen available for the finale tomorrow before they come in and come back to Toronto to start the home opener on Monday. It's extremely encouraging to see Nate Pearson coming in too, pitching a couple of innings with 3 strikeouts, just 1 hit allowed. Hitting 99, hitting 100 with the fastball, harnessing the slider, making it a good pitch for him, making it a putout pitch a lot of the times too. That's all very encouraging. Again, the Blue Jays rotation should be fine. This is definitely the biggest strength this club has, and then finding these gems in the bullpen as well. And if the bats can stay a little bit consistent, or if they can, you know, keep the signs of life that we saw today, then the Blue Jays should be fine. I don't think that there's any reason for concern giving up 9 runs today. This was completely an outlier. And like you said, most of the time with Gosman on the mound show, the Blue Jays' performance today on the offensive side would have been enough, just not tonight.
So some time to give us a call, 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. If you prefer to text us as well, I see a lot of texts here on the text line, 590-590, name and location. The People's Text Line is always open. Julia, before we take a quick break and continue taking people's texts, a little bit more from John Schneider, I wanted to read these texts for you.
Yep.
And a lot of them about Vladimir Guerrero Jr. And Vladdy had another, despite the home run, I would say not a great night.
Right.
Okay, so Mike from Assiniboia says, Vladdy seeing the ball, eyes emoji, batting under 200. What's it going to look like when he struggles? He's on pace for 36 RBI. Tony from Kitchener, can Vladdy hit a home run with runners on and not just single home runs? Don't get me wrong, it's good he is swinging, but it's great when he can bring in all those on base and not ground out or into a DP. And then a couple other texts as well. Kaylin in Toronto. Kaylin did not like the Vladdy dance around the bases.
Yeah.
And the shishing thing.
I can't blame Kaylin. I understand that. It definitely wasn't the time to do it, right? When you're losing 9-1 and you hit a solo home run, probably not the best time to do all of that.
I really don't have a huge issue, mainly because Vladdy has shown in his career that he has never stopped doing these things.
Like
he's never stopped the little hitch in between second and third. He's never really stopped the shushing thing. He's never really shushed like the fist pump thing. You know, he sometimes puts the fake home run jacket on in the dugout, which I don't think he does a lot this year. Then again, he's only hit 2 home runs, so not a lot of opportunity for that. And you know, like those things, he doesn't stop dumping Gatorade on people when they win. It just, I don't have a huge issue with it, mainly because that's clearly just who he is. I do agree with you and with Kaylin, like if you're losing big, maybe you'd cut it out. But
yeah,
at the same time, that's a big part of who you are, then it doesn't really change anything.
It did seem like he was playing it up a little bit today, just making it a little bit more pronounced, perhaps because we are at Yankee Stadium and we all remember the not even dead comments that he made a couple years ago when asked if he would ever play for the Yankees. I don't know if there's just an addition there. It was good in my mind. Yeah, the first few ABs, again, it just looked like the Vladdy we saw yesterday, and it wasn't really there. He was jumpy. He didn't really know what to do. He popped up at one point, and it was just very clear that the game wasn't there. But it's the ability to make the in-game adjustments that is going to differentiate who Vladimir Guerrero Jr. was and who he is trying to be.
Right.
And I do think that we need to point out and highlight that he did make that in-game adjustment in the AB in which he hit the home run, when you can see that he was waiting for his pitch and he got it. And maybe that wouldn't have been a home run in many parks. Maybe that's a double. Maybe that's a long fly out, right? Of course, those ABs also happen, and that doesn't mean it's a bat at bat. It just means that that's how the game of baseball works. It is extremely hard to be successful, and sometimes luck also works in your favor. But the truth of the matter is that in that at bat, we saw flashes of what can be. We saw that Vladimir Guerrero Jr. can be an elite bat-to-ball guy, and then he just has natural power. The fact that he drove that ball to the opposite field as far as he did is a testament to that. And so slowing the game down will be big for Vladdy this year. It's very clear that most of the time he is pressing at the plate. He seems to think that the offense needs to go through him, especially when other guys are struggling. And that is all going to add to his own, to the pressure that he puts on himself. It's not even, you know, anything external necessarily. But then if he can slow the game down, like we saw today when he hit the home run, like we saw yesterday in his final at bat, when sure, he struck out, but he saw a ton of pitches. And it was still a productive at bat because he allowed a run to come in and score on a wild pitch. That is the Vladimir Guerrero Jr. that we expect to see with all of his talent. It's it's difficult that that we're still seeing, and I understand the frustration of fans, that we're still seeing the yin and the yang a little bit, but it's clear that the talent is there. Now, it is up to this coaching staff as well as Vladdy himself to bring that forward and to let the moments in which he's pressing, which will exist, right, Cho? It's natural.
Sure.
That these moments will come, but to allow those moments to be a little bit more in the background and not what we have come to expect from a guy like Vladdy, if that makes any sense.
I definitely don't want to sound like I'm trying to be like, oh, well, the home run meant nothing, because they almost won this game. Like, without the home run, it would have been a 2-run loss instead of a 1-run loss. So it's all a part of it. Like, scoring is scoring. But at the same time, it is funny to hear, like, John Schneider, who we just heard talk about Gosman. He went out of his way to say the Stanton home run would have been a pop-up anywhere else. I mean, like, the Vladdy home run was a home run in 6 ballparks, and I don't believe one of them was the Rogers Center. It was a 362 feet. Like, it felt, at the moment, it definitely felt like Chris Paul sings a huge 3 to cut the lead to 42, yeah, like that. But it did matter in the end. So it just, I look at it in 2 different ways because, again, I'm not sure the problems for Vladdy have been, like, solved necessarily. It is 9 games in, so it's definitely a lot of runway for things to turn around. It's just, again, you and I had the conversation after last weekend, yeah, in Tampa, where it looked like he was swinging at things in a very tight part
That's
of the
right.
strike zone. He was a lot of plate discipline, and the conversation has completely changed. It's like he lost all of that in Houston, and certainly in the first couple games here, kind of in New York. It's just, I don't know. I want to see more of what we saw from Vladdy in Tampa than we did in Houston and for most of these games in the Bronx. So I don't know. I think the story is not over with Vladimir Guerrero Jr. by any means, but gosh, it is a little dispiriting sometimes to see him take the swings that he swings at. And like, for example, in the 3rd inning, 2 on, nobody out, he pops up on the first pitch. That was, like, basically right in the middle of the zone. And it's like, either don't swing at it, or blast that ball.
Or commit,
yeah,
for sure.
And that's, I think that's where a lot of the crux of the issues lie for me with Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Let's take a quick break here, Julia.
Let's do it.
And when we come back, a lot of text still on the text line, 590-590, and we'll hear from John Schneider as well on the other side. You're listening to Jays Talk. Still some time to give us a call if you like. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Or if you want to shoot us a text as well, if that's easier, 590-590, name and location via the People's Text Line. Jays Talk continues after this. Show and Julia with you on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
It's a weird rule. It's almost like a loophole. You know, the ball's in Servant's glove, and then Volpe check swings and hits his glove, which by rule is catcher's interference. Lance had it right. And once it goes to New York, you know, all bets are off. So, maybe MLB can look into that. Yeah. With the way catchers are setting up so close to hitters, you know, you can basically tell your guys, just if it's called strike 3, throw your bat out there and see if you get lucky. Didn't like that one.
That is John Schneider discussing the truly bizarre catcher's interference situation with Brian Servin very early in this ball game, and
Gosman still on the mound.
Gosman was still in there, and it's tongue in cheek answer from John Schneider, but it didn't make me think in the moment where if that's catcher's interference, then should you just swing for the glove every single time? Like, if that's going to be called catcher's interference, you might as well. Like, the batter might as well, no matter where the ball is, essentially, if that's what's going to be called. So I did admittedly find that quite bizarre. So I am glad John Schneider did address that. That's Julia Kreutz. I'm Sho Ali. You're listening to Jays Talk on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Jays 9-8 losers to the Yankees in New York. The series now even at 1 game apiece. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 are the numbers to call. You can text us as well, 590-590, name and location. The People's Text Line is always open. I wanted to read a couple more texts, some positive ones, Julia. I think a lot of people finding some moral victories despite a 9-8
loss.
On a
Saturday night, no less.
On a Saturday night, it's very true. I see one here. There are a lot of ones on Ernie Clement and Davis Schneider. There's no name on this one. Oh, yeah, Ben from Halifax. Here we go. Ben says, of course, the offense comes alive when the pitching is off. Welcome to the 2024 Blue Jays. Babe and Clement should be in the lineup every night. Claudio from King City, the positives we can take from this game, the bats were better. Good outings from White and Pearson, and we'll certainly get to Nate Pearson. And the hitting of Ernie Clement, he seems legit. Your thoughts? And you know what? I got to say, like, we heard so much, Julia, in the offseason about internal options being the best the best options. And, you know, guys will emerge from within. Well, if that's the case, Ernie Clement and David Schneider should be playing every night then. Like, I totally get the whole splits thing with David Schneider. Like, he's a righty and you want to see him, you know, you want to see him then play the matchups really well. And that has largely worked out so far. But at the same time, if so many other guys are not hitting, do you not have to play him? Like, that's kind of where I'm at this point. Like, in my head understands why they do what they do. But from an eye test perspective, he's clearly been one of the more consistent hitters, and Ernie Clement as well.
Yeah, with how he's swinging the ball right now, or the bat right now, I think that there's not a lot of justification that you could use to keep David Schneider out of the lineup. I do think that, you know, Ernie Clement is a given at this point with what he has done, and to think that we entered spring training unsure that he would make this team, and now here we are, and he is arguably just the most consistent contributor for this offense. And then you come in, and Schneider is kind of the same deal, in which it's not just that he's hitting, show, it's that he is clutch, right? We saw the two-run home run to win it in Houston. We saw it again today with that double. By the way, is Juan Soto okay? There were a couple of those doubles from the Blue Jays that hit the wall in which to right field, in which Soto just seemed to not know where the ball was at all. I don't know if he's losing it. There was a yellow board at the wall. I don't know if that was getting in his way, but it was really bizarre to see Juan Soto trying to get to those balls and just failing miserably.
You know what? I do think the second one, I think he just screwed it up. I do. But the first one, I genuinely believe he made a conscious decision to not barrel into that outfield wall.
Fair enough.
And I don't really blame him for not doing that, but I do believe the first one is intentional, the second one less so.
Yeah, and you know, with the Schneider one, I kind of thought that ball was gone. I'm not going to lie. It was really well hit, and again, helped the Blue Jays come back into this game. When you think about what Clement is doing, again, it is helping the Blue Jays stay in games. And now, I don't even think that the question should be, are these guys hitting every day? It's where are they hitting in the lineup? Because when you see the game start with a George Springer double, and you think to yourself, okay, this is a good sign. They have a runner in scoring position. They have no one out. It's clear that Clark Schmidt is struggling a little bit. Pitchers were, in general, it was very cold in New York, right? So they have to capitalize on this. And then Vladdy comes in and just advances Springer. And then you see a couple of at-bats later, the inning is done, and they have nothing to show for it.
Yeah.
So if you have your most productive batters right now be an Ernie Clement, and perhaps a Davis Schneider, who we've seen some ugly at-bats from him too, but whatever. Right now, the truth of the matter is that he's hitting better than most guys on this team.
That's the truth.
Where are they hitting in this lineup? How are you constructing it to make sure that you don't strand a leadoff double two nights in a row, right? These are the questions the Blue Jays should be asking themselves right now, and it's not really the time to think about size of contracts or how they are going to appease any personalities. Right now is the time to create a lineup in which they can actually win games and capitalize on opportunities. We have been talking so much about defensive versatility as a way to get guys into this lineup. Well, Davis Schneider just added left field to his major league resume. Ernie Clement played left field as well. He can play pretty much anywhere you put him in the infield. So how are you going to organize this lineup and this roster in a way where you're actually capitalizing on the strengths of the guys that you do have? And the truth is, I don't think you should have Clement hitting towards the bottom half.
Right.
I don't think that is the right strategy to win games right now.
Like, should Ernie Clement, Julia, be hitting ahead of, and I'm just going to name some names here. You tell me, okay? Alejandro Kirk, Dalton Varsho, Kevin Kiermaier, certainly IKF when he's in there, certainly Brian Servin when he's in there as well. But like he should be hitting, and David Schneider probably as well, hitting in front of all of those guys. Like, Kevin Biggio might be the only guy. And honestly, based on the way they've produced so far, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is one of those guys. Like, I'm not saying that Vladdy should be hitting eighth, because that's crazy. But at the same time, I don't know. Like if Justin Turner, and Justin Turner has been exactly as advertised, right.
He's been very good.
I honestly think Justin Turner probably has been the team's best hitter.
Yeah.
And if he's the best hitter, Ernie Clement and David Schneider are 2 and 3.
That's correct.
Through 9 games. So you leave Justin Turner where he is. Do you bump up David Schneider, Ernie Clement to batting 5-6, for example? Probably.
Yeah, I got to say, I understand on paper why you would have Daniel Vogelbach hitting number 5 today. You kind of want to front load the power and you want to get to pitchers early in the game. The strategy there is okay. But when you have a guy like Clement hitting the way that he is, I would have flip-flopped Vogelbach and Clement, at least,
right,
is what I would have done here. And you know, you obviously can't guarantee that the results would be different. You can't guarantee that that would have scored George Springer. And, you know, if Gausman comes in and gives up as many runs as he did, it may still be a drop in the bucket. But you are giving your starting pitcher a better chance of coming in with a lead from square one. And it may be very well, it may shape up to be a different game. And when you see the Blue Jays strand leadoff doubles on back-to-back games, well, then maybe it's time to rethink how this lineup is configured and making sure that that doesn't happen again. So at the very least, Clement hitting 5 and Vogelbach hitting 6, I think would have made a little more sense today. I understand it's a very difficult show to move anyone that's at the top right now.
Right.
But something has got to give here. And, you know, if you're going with the purest logic, your hottest hitters should have the most at-bats, period.
Yeah, it's very simple. It's as simple as that. I do wonder on Vogelbach. Like, I know he had some big moments today. He also had some snafus today, and including a moment where he got caught well off the bag in a rundown when he was off of second base. And I thought to myself, did he like forget how many outs there were? Like, what went on there? I have no idea. It just seemed very bizarre because he's not exactly, and never has been, even when he was a little younger, he's never has been the most fleet of foot. So why is he like midway the third base? I don't know. That was a little bizarre to me. But my point with Vogelbach really, Julia, is that, like, I wonder what his place on this roster is, knowing that he does not play a lot and that he is essentially occupying a spot on the bench. Joey Votto does not seem to be ready, which also leads me to believe, like, how badly did he twist that ankle while stepping on the bat? Like, it just, like, feels like it was ages ago at this point, and he's still not ready. So you hope he gets better soon. But, I mean, like, would that spot not be better filled with, like, I don't know, like Tommy Pham? He's still out there, right? Or I don't know who else is available from a free agent perspective. Brandon Belt is still out there as well. Like, if you're only using them in such specific bench situations or DH situations, like, you probably could get the same thing from Belt or Pham, for example. I would think, honestly.
Yeah, this is a guy, he had a very strong spring, right? So I was one of the proponents of him making the team out of spring because he did, the power showed up big time. And not only that, he quickly became someone that is valued in the clubhouse, which is also something that we need to highlight.
Right.
When John Schneider announced that Vogelbach was one of the guys that had made the roster, he went out of his way to say, I'm excited to have him as the person in the clubhouse as well. So the Blue Jays are trying to fill maybe a little bit of a void in leadership. You bring a guy in like Justin Turner. You obviously have George Springer in the roster. You have a Kevin Kiermaier who's not necessarily thought of as a hitter first, but who kind of fills in that leadership role. And Vogelbach, I think, is also someone who has that potential to be a sounding board, to be someone that guys can talk hitting with, and that it can be just as valuable as his small sample of contributions at the plate. So it's early to completely rule him out and to, you know, I guess, vehemently question the decision of having him on the roster, but he knows as well as anybody that his presence on this team does hinge in large part on performance.
Yeah.
And so he is probably the most interested guy in turning his numbers around a little bit. And we know that he can. He has done it before. He has the pop in his bat. He has worked some pretty good at-bats with the Blue Jays this season so far. It's just, again, it's difficult to be a consistent hitter when you're not in the lineup every day. And I think that is also what we're seeing a little bit from Vogelbach right now.
So you're saying pump the brakes on DFAing Vogelbach?
Well, just a little bit. I may join the, you know, you never know, but I do think that for right now, that is an okay spot to have Vogelback in.
I see a couple of texts here on Nate Pearson and Tim and Hamilton. I like this text. Tim says, "Big Nate looking real solid tonight, putting up triple digits." We did see him hit 100 tonight. It was pretty cool. Tim also says, "I remember many years ago, Stephen Brunt said the Jays' competitive window would open when Pearson arrived. I'm not giving up yet." It's funny. I do remember that too, actually, Tim. I think that might have even been... No, I think I was working here at that time.
That's pretty wild.
I think that might have been from Writer's Block or even when Blair was filling in on primetime, perhaps. But I do remember there was a lot of talk about Pearson's stature in this organization. He did look good tonight, and it came to hold the score where it was, and I think Mitch White's outing did a lot to make sure the bullpen was not overused, which is definitely really good. So positive, again, something we talked about in Mitch White's outing. But I got to say, I was impressed by Nate Pearson. I don't know you're going to always get that from him, but in a critical situation, he came in and played pretty well. So I do hope that's something we see more often, because he was a relatively important reliever for a huge chunk of time last year, Julia, and then it kind of
hit a wall.
He hit a wall, went off the rails a little bit.
Yeah.
Never really recovered to the point where he was a, you know, it's going to be the first time I say this year, but he was in the circle of trust, and I don't know where he is in that circle of trust right now, because it's a little topsy-turvy with Romano and Swanson still on the shelf.
But if
Nate Pearson can be a member of that circle of trust, I think that would be a great boon for a bullpen that, you know, has looked a little shaky at times.
As a long man, no less, to have a guy right. that you trust to come in. And I spoke to him a little bit about that in spring training show. And I asked him, what is it like to pitch multiple innings in relief? Because, you know, when you're coming out of the pen for one inning, and you know you can give it your all and you can start chucking 100 miles per hour right away. And it's no coincidence that we saw him hit 100 miles per hour later into his outing, because and this is something that he told me, you know, pitching multiple innings out of the pen is one of the most difficult things he has had to do. And this is a guy that has done a little bit of everything.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah,
he
yeah.
started his career as a starter, and then he came in, just moved to the bullpen full time. You didn't really know if there would be a ton of length in him. The Blue Jays emphasized that, stretched him out to be a guy that can pitch multiple innings, but it is very difficult to do the up downs, as the pitchers like to say, when you sit back down in the dugout and you still need to focus and you know that you need to come back, but you're not a starter. So mentally, that adjustment is a tough one. And as Pearson said, one of the toughest things to do as a pitcher. So to see him not only, you know, tread water or not only give the Blue Jays a chance, but to thrive in that situation against an extremely difficult lineup as the Yankees, you can see that the not only the mental side of the game is in the right place, but the physical side of the game is also there. And you know, whenever we see Nate Pearson hit triple digits, it's always an exciting day at the ballpark. So very, very much a positive for the Blue Jays.
39 pitches, 24 of them were strikes for Pearson over two innings of work. He allowed one hit. He did walk two guys, but he got three strikeouts as well. So I do hope that is something we see more of, because again, the circle of trust has been kind of thrown into a little bit of disarray here in the first nine games of the season. And it's because of the injuries to Swanson. It's because of the injury to Romano. Tim Mesa has looked a little shakier. He's clearly just not in midseason form yet. I'm not super worried about Tim Mesa, but it is something to kind of keep some modicum of attention on. And, you know, Jordan Hicks is off doing things with the Giants, for example. It's just, you look at how the bullpen is constructed in 2024, Bonner Francis no longer a member of the bullpen, Mitch White, I guess, no longer a member of the bullpen, like at least for now, because of his backing up of Kevin Gausman. Certainly, I'm sure he would be fine, but if he's not a part of that, Francis is not a part of that. Like, there are not a lot of guys like Jimmy Garcia and Chad Green, you know what I mean? Yenesis Cabrera. And then we've kind of named all the names in the bullpen right now. So you do need more from guys you haven't gotten more from. And Nate Pearson would be a great candidate from this. To wrap up here, Julia, before we go, Forbes in Toronto texts in to say, to put a kind of a bow on the Daniel Vogelbach pinch running situation, not pinch running for him. Another thing to consider is if DV is pinch run for and is safe at second and Schneider comes to the plate as a tying run, then Soto probably playing a few steps deeper and right, him being told no doubles, nothing over your head, and maybe he doesn't butcher that fly ball. So I like that point as well. I just, the Daniel Vogelbach pinch running situation, I think, is one of the first really, you know, big questions about John Schneider we've seen this year, if only because I think it feels like a lot of these situations are planned out for, gamed out for before the game even starts. And that's why I'm not so quick at this particular situation to say it's all John Schneider's fault, because personally, honestly, I'd rather have Biggio bat late in games than the IKF.
Absolutely.
That's what it is.
Especially against a right-handed pitcher in Clay Holmes. And we've seen so many good at bats from Biggio this year already. His game has clearly turned a corner in that sense. Last year, the conversations around Biggio were so different, and to see him step up in those moments, it is, you know, it's a vote of confidence, and one that he rewarded big time with the single, with the RBI single there. So all in all, show no complaints on how this game was managed, and definitely good momentum going into the finale tomorrow.
8 runs scored by the Blue Jays. You hope they can take some of that with them for Bowden Francis. He'll take the mound tomorrow. Luis Gil will go for the Yankees. That's Julia Kreutz. I'm Sho Ali. Appreciate you being with us on Blue Jays Baseball, brought to you by your local family-owned Crown Rust Control Centers in Barrie and Orillia. Protect your vehicle from rust today. Your local family-owned Crown at crown.com, Canada's number one rust protection. For Julia Kreutz, Ben Schulman, Chris LaRue, Nick Blackmore, Tom Young, I'm Sho Ali. Jays 9-8 losers tonight. We're back tomorrow to put a bow on Jays Yankees. Bowden Francis, Luis Gil will go in the pitching matchup. We'll talk to you tomorrow.